Chapter 7 Groupthink. Standing on stage in front of his audience, a technology inventor pulled something out of his pocket. It was so much smaller than competing products that nobody in the room could believe it. He was a man known for his originality and creativity, and he didn't believe in market research. He said his company makes products that people do not even know they want. This man made his company great, only to be forced out and then watch his company disappear. The story seems to describe Steve Jobs, but actually this man was one of Jobs' heroes, Edwin Land, the man behind Polaroid. Today, Land is remembered for inventing the instant camera. But Land also invented something much more important, the light filter that is used in billions of products, from sunglasses to watches. Land was responsible for 535 patents, more than any American before him, except for Thomas Edison. Land was certainly a great original, but his company did not encourage originality. Polaroid was one of the companies that started work on the digital camera, but, in the end, the company failed because of it. Polaroid's engineers had a high-quality digital camera ready in 1992, but the inventors couldn't persuade the company to start selling it until 1996. By then, there were more than 40 other digital cameras on the market. Polaroid made a basic mistake. Within the company, many people thought that customers would always want to have printed pictures, and the important people in the organisation didn't question this idea. It was a case of groupthink, the desire to reach agreement instead of allowing disagreement. Groupthink is the enemy of originality. In a famous study, the psychologist Irving Yanis argued that many bad decisions made by the United States government were caused by groupthink. Yanis believed that groupthink occurred when people felt they were deeply involved in a group and they wanted to agree with a group, instead of suggesting different ideas. He said that it was the safe, friendly feelings inside a close group that created groupthink. People accepted Yanis' theory for a long time, but it isn't true. Yanis did his work in 1973, but researchers now have seen a lot more government documents, and it's clear that these bad decisions were not made by one small, close group. And there was another problem with Yanis' theory. Most of the time, he looked at groups making bad decisions. But how do we know that it was actually the closeness of the group that caused the bad decisions? Yanis needed to compare good and bad decisions to see whether close groups are more likely to make decisions through groupthink. The theory of close groups causing groupthink isn't true in business either. When researchers looked at successful and failed decisions in management teams at 7 major companies, they discovered that close groups weren't more likely to want to agree with each other and refuse different ideas. In fact, close groups often made better business decisions. The same was true in politics. In this chapter, I want to look at what really causes groupthink and what we can do to prevent it. Why do some close groups make bad decisions while others make good ones? I want to see how to fight groupthink and allow original opinions. I'll look at Polaroid's mistakes, and I'll also examine an organisation that has an interesting new way of avoiding conformity. You'll see why people often don't listen to original ideas, and why it's sometimes better to ask people to complain about problems rather than to solve them. In the end, you'll see what ordinary people and organisations can do to allow originality to develop. Commitment to organisations. In the 1990s, a group of experts led by James Barron interviewed 200 people who had started technology companies in Silicon Valley. They asked these leaders what sort of organisation they were trying to develop when they started out. They found three major organisational plans: professional, star, and commitment. In a professional organisation, managers tried to hire people with the right skills. Engineers who could write in JavaScript or C++, for example. In a star organisation, managers were not so interested in skills as in the future. They looked for the brightest people and didn't worry so much about their skills because these people would learn quickly. In a commitment organisation, employees were hired to fit company culture. Skills and intelligence were useful, but the important thing was that the employee believed in the company. Commitment organisations wanted to build strong emotional links between employees and to the organisation. They often used words like family and love when they talked about the company. Barron's team wanted to see which type of organisation led to the most success. They followed the 200 companies through the 1990s into the 2000s. They discovered that one organisational culture was much better than the others. Commitment. Where a company had a commitment culture, the number of failures was zero. Not one of them went out of business. But the number of failures for star organisations was high, and professional companies did even worse. We can see that a commitment culture worked well in the early days of Polaroid, when everybody worked hard and there was a desire for originality and quality. When Edwin Land was developing his instant camera, he once worked for 18 days without stopping, not even changing his clothes. While his competitor, Kodak, hired scientists, Land looked for a mixed group of employees, including women with artistic experience. Just like the commitment organisations in Silicon Valley, he didn't worry about skills or star qualities. He wanted people who would have original ideas and work hard for the company. His employees developed strong emotional links with the company. When you feel like that, it's hard to imagine working somewhere else. After the instant camera, Polaroid was responsible for two other important new developments in film technology. The first was the use of sepia, or brown photos. Black and white instant photos often faded, and sepia worked better. The person who discovered that was Meroe Morse, who had been a student of art history and had not studied either physics or chemistry in college. She worked so hard that her laboratory worked 24 hours a day. The second new product was instant colour photography. Howard Rogers, who had been a car mechanic, worked for 15 years to solve that problem. Problems with growth. Commitment cultures are very useful at the beginning of the life of an organisation. But, over time, things don't usually go so well. Although these companies grow well at first, growth slows down after a time. When employees share a commitment to the company's clear goals, They can work well in a business situation that they understand. But if things keep changing, as they do in the computer or airline industries, the positive things about this strong culture disappear. When the market is changing, these companies find it difficult to look outside of themselves, and they fail to learn and change. This is what happened with Polaroid. After Land invented the instant camera in 1948, the company went from making under $7 million in 1950 to making $950 million in 1976. During this time, there were no big changes in the industry. Customers loved high-quality cameras that printed instant pictures. But with the development of digital technology, the market began to change, and Polaroid's culture didn't allow the company to move as fast as market developments. In 1980, Land was contacted by Akio Morita of Sony, who suggested that film was not the future and wanted Sony and Polaroid to work together on an electronic camera. Land wasn't interested. He thought only about the chemistry and physics in photography and didn't believe digital photos would ever be good enough. As Polaroid began to have difficulties, Land didn't look outside of his organisation. Instead, he worked only with his supporters inside the company. He wanted to make an instant movie camera, and he wouldn't listen to any critics. When it was ready, it wasn't a success. It made only a few minutes of video, while competitors already had cameras that could make several hours. The company lost $600 million, and Land lost his job. Land was not alone in the way he behaved. Research shows that the worse a company does, the more the bosses get advice only from the people who agree with them. But this is the opposite of what they should do. Different opinions are useful, even when they are wrong. The evidence suggests that it isn't social links that create groupthink, but too much confidence. Polaroid had too much confidence that customers would always want printed pictures, and they refused to look at other original ideas. So how can you build a strong culture that welcomes disagreement? Think differently. When I asked entrepreneurs and students about the strongest culture they had ever met in an organisation, the winner was Bridgewater Associates. This company in Connecticut manages over $170 billion for governments, universities, and other organisations. The company culture is explained in a book of 200 key ideas. Although the company manages money, none of these ideas are about money. They are about how to behave in any situation that you meet, at work or outside. New employees are hired only if they fit in with the company's ideas, and there is a camp where they study and discuss them. Although there is a lot of discussion, Bridgewater is a close, friendly organisation. Many employees call it a family, and people often work there for a long time. Although Bridgewater has a strong commitment culture in an industry that changes all the time, it has continued to be successful for 20 years. Its secret is that it encourages original ideas. If you are an investor, you can only succeed if you think differently from everyone else. Bridgewater avoids groupthink by inviting different opinions from everyone in the company. When employees share independent ideas instead of agreeing with everyone else, there is a much better chance that Bridgewater will make decisions no one else has thought of. And then there is a better chance they will be right when the rest of the market is wrong. I want to look now at the culture of the company, which lies behind its brilliant decisions. Bridgewater's success begins with the man who started the company, Ray Dalio. He's been called the Steve Jobs of investing, but employees don't behave as though he is special. They are expected to be critical of him, and employee comments are shared across the company. One of the 200 key ideas is, no one has the right to hold a critical opinion without speaking up about it. Dalio wants people who think independently and believes that this will make the culture richer and stronger and better able to avoid groupthink. Finding complainers. If you're a leader talking to your employees, how would you complete this sentence? Don't bring me blank. Bring me blank. I learned about this question from David Hoffman, and I've presented it to thousands of groups of leaders. They always shout out the same answer. Don't bring me problems, bring me answers. This seems wise. We don't want people just to complain. When they see something wrong, they should find a way to fix it. But when it comes to groupthink, this isn't always a good thing. Hoffman has done a lot of research in this area, and he found that a culture that looks mainly at solving problems doesn't encourage people to investigate. If you are expected to always have an answer, you come to meetings ready with your answers, and you don't get the chance to learn from others. To try to avoid this problem, Google has created a team of complainers, engineers across the company who are well known for recognizing problems and saying what they really think, even if it is negative. Before a major change, managers often ask this team to give critical feedback. By talking to the complainers early, the managers get the feedback, and the complainers often then become the key people to support the change. Ray Dalio at Bridgewater doesn't expect employees to bring him answers. One of the first things he did in the company was to create a list of problems, which any employee could add to. Getting problems noted is half the battle against groupthink. The other half is listening to the right ideas for solving them. Bridgewater collects a group of people to look at the problems, share their ideas, find out what has gone wrong and why, and suggest ways of solving the problems. It is important that ideas are shared. As Carl Weick advises, argue like you're right and listen like you're wrong. Critical feedback. Even if an organisation doesn't encourage critical feedback from its employees, there may be ways of changing the culture. At Index Group, the company's CEO, Tom Geraghty, brought in an expert to tell him everything he did wrong in front of his 100 employees. By showing he was happy to get feedback, he found that employees from across the company were more likely to challenge his ideas and to challenge one another. I've learnt to do something similar in my classroom. I collect feedback from students after the first month, asking for suggestions for improvement. I then email all the feedback to the class. In the next class, I discuss the suggestions, ask for more feedback, and suggest changes. Students often say that this helps them to feel comfortable about becoming more involved in improving the class. It isn't just the open culture at Bridgewater that makes it easier for employees to challenge managers. When they are new in the company, employees are encouraged to question the company's key ideas. In most companies, the employee is busy learning the job for the first few months and isn't encouraged to think about any problems. But in fact, those early days, when employees have more time and before they see the world in the company way, are a good time for them to think about improving the culture. A few years ago, I was hired by Goldman Sachs to help them attract and keep excellent employees by encouraging those employees to improve their place of work. One thing we introduced was an entry interview. Managers have meetings to ask new employees for ideas when they start, instead of waiting to ask employees what they thought of the company when they leave. It's easier to start a relationship with a door open than to try to push open a door that has already been closed. Movers and Shapers. Ray Dalio at Bridgewater is interested in understanding people who shape the world and in finding out how they are similar. He's interviewed many originals of our time and has studied originals from history like Benjamin Franklin and Albert Einstein. Of course, all of these people were enthusiastic and had great imagination, but Dalio has three other qualities on his list of similarities. First, shapers are independent thinkers and rebels who ask a lot of questions. Second, they are honest critics and don't care who they are talking to. And third, they are not afraid of risk. Their fear of not succeeding is greater than their fear of failure. If Dalio doesn't find a shaper to follow him, Bridgewater may go the same way as Polaroid. But Dalio knows that preventing groupthink is about more than the ideas of one leader. The greatest shapers don't stop at introducing originality into the world. They create cultures that encourage originality in others.